Hey, it's NPR's Book of the Day. I'm Andrew Limbong. The novelist Lydia Millett has written her first nonfiction book. It's called We Loved It All, A Memory of Life. And what's funny is that the promotional copy from the publisher calls it an anti-memoir, which, as I understand it, just means a memoir that kind of resists being confined to the, so here's the ABCs of my life, which in some ways, isn't that what all the best, most interesting memoirs do? And in this conversation with NPR's Leila Fadel, Millett uses the word window twice to explain what she's going for in her book. You know, she uses it once at the beginning and once at the end, which I think is an interesting insight to how she sees writing about the world around her. That's not the whole picture, but just what she can see outside her window. That's ahead.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Noom. Noom understands that not everyone is starting from the same place and takes that into account. With their first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, you can find 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold. This message comes from NPR sponsor, Noom. Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, helps you build new habits for a healthier lifestyle. Check out The Noom Kitchen for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
When Lydia Millett started writing her first nonfiction book, she was focused on animals, treating it like an encyclopedia. But as she continued, she shifted to capturing moments of understanding, exploring our connection to the natural world. In her new book, We Loved It All, A Memory of Life, which is out today, Millett takes us from vignettes about animals in the natural world to contemplating how to raise children and be a genuinely good citizen during multiple existential crises. I spoke with Lydia Millett about her writing journey.
When I read a book, I'm always most delighted when I come upon a moment that surprises me, that seems like a window opening onto something I didn't see before or recognize or understand. And I really wanted to, in this particular book, try to make sort of a small tapestry of those moments, this sort of play of light on shadow. And so it was kind of natural, even more natural than it might be for me with fiction, to write it in like a stream of pieces that were like sort of stepping stones across a river or something.
Across a life.
Across a life, yeah.
You have always written fiction. What was the biggest change about going to nonfiction for the first time?
With fiction, you always have plausible deniability, right? You can say,
it wasn't me.
No, yeah, right. It wasn't me. That novel isn't really about me or my sainted mother or my terrible ex-boyfriend. And actually, often that denial is true. But with this, I wanted to write something unfiltered where I played things as straight as I could and didn't pull my punches and wasn't afraid to be too earnest or too heartfelt.
Mm-hmm.
And so what had really preoccupied me in the background for decades was this question of how to raise children and just how to be a genuinely good citizen in this moment of multiple existential crises. You know, how all of us can stay hopeful enough to be forces for generosity and kindness in the world, but not, you know, not positive Pollyannas who tip over into passivity or denial.
Mm. It's interesting because you write about objectively depressing things, right? The abuse of animals for human beings' needs, the strangeness of raising a human in the most intimate way only to have them leave you because that's what the world is. But there is a love and a satire in the writing. How do you do that?
Well, first of all, I've never been one to be able to read books that didn't have some tiny sliver of humor in them or cheerfulness. I think I can't help but sometimes reach for that, you know, that moment of maybe it's satire or maybe it's just trying to mimic the sort of quiet wit that my father had. But I always want there to be something to make us stand back. And humor does that, I think.
Yeah. I mean, your books, and this book also, is so much about interconnectedness and community and our connections to nature. What happens when we sever our connections with nature?
I think when we grow up, we're told by the culture, and we even tell our own children, as we've been told by our parents, to put away childish things. And the love of animals has been seen as part of that realm of childhood. Mm-hmm. So very quickly as teenagers, we go from being surrounded by animals because, you know, animals are our songs, they're our clothing, they're our beds. We go really quickly from being surrounded by those other kinds of beings to putting up posters of celebrities on our walls. We go from identifying with other animals to idolizing and competing with other people. Mm. And I think if we reclaimed that love that and fascination that we have for the others, not only animals, but also trees and plants and the landscapes they live in. Mm-hmm. What if we allowed ourselves to speak the love that we have for them and grieve for them when they're lost?
So much about being a human is about being isolated, right? We're on our phones and everything can be done without talking to anybody, without interacting with the world. I wonder how you think about that as you write this book that really does look at our interconnectedness and where we find community and the way we are with the world as human beings and what we've done to the world as human beings.
Well, I think it's a kind of curious paradox, or at least a conundrum, because, I mean, technology clearly is so dangerous, right? Mm-hmm. This Tower of Babel that proliferates seemingly infinitely and that alienates us from each other and from the rest of organic life, but at the same time can bring us so much closer. And it's also a curse, like having all this information is so overwhelming and having all these stimuli and not knowing how to separate the real. So in a way, it can be paralyzing. And in another way, it gives us almost a form of omniscience.
When you think about how to tell somebody what this book is about, because it's about so much, how would you describe it? And what are some passages and parts of the book that you look to and think, this is what I was trying to say?
Well, first it was about the animals. And then I understood that I wasn't really in a position to write an encyclopedia. It's more like a hymn or a prayer. Oh. Some kind of sacred song in a hymn or prayer. I mean, we have a presence within that, but it's not really about us. I want the book to be about those windows, the sort of moments of recognition and understanding that can suddenly crop up out of the background. I want it to be about maybe sometimes just being able to find in the sentences a glimpse of something you didn't see so clearly before.
That's Lydia Millett. She's the author of We Loved It All, A Memory of Life. Lydia, thanks so much.
Oh, I was delighted to be here. Thank you so much.
There are a lot of issues on voters' minds right now. Six big ones could help decide the election: guns, reproductive rights, immigration, the economy, healthcare, and the wars overseas. On the Consider This podcast from NPR, we will unpack the debates on these issues and what's at stake. You can listen to NPR's Consider This wherever you get your podcasts.
This message comes from NPR sponsor American Express. Take your business further with the smart and flexible Amex Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits that help unlock more value from your business purchases. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard. This message comes from NPR sponsor State Farm. In the market for small business insurance, State Farm agents can help you create a personalized plan that fits your business needs and budget. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.